The disruption to journalism in the next 20 years will probably be greater than we've seen in the same period starting at the beginning of this century. So what might it look like? The Future of Journalism series attempts to paint that picture. I'm Peter Wilkinson with the Alliance for Journalist Freedom in Australia, and we say it's flawed planning to create commitments to a future if we don't know where we're heading, to create legislation and issue court decisions, to encourage journalists on a career path if we don't have a good idea of where we should be going. Gavin Morris joined the ABC in 2008. Most recently, he's been the ABC's Director of News, Analysis and Investigations for five of possibly its most disrupted years, in which he's overseen the closure of a number of programs and created a digital news website that's now the most read in Australia. How have you become the number one online news website? What pathway did you take to achieve that?
We went through, as an industry, I think, a really interesting period about 5 or 6 years ago when the rise of clickbait really challenged the fundamentals of all news and information businesses and operations. And I think at that point there was a fork in the road. You could either go down the clickbait path and pursue, you know, what at the time seemed like a kind of throughput advertising model that required lots of traffic going very quickly, or you could pursue a model that said, where is the real value in news and information and in things that people are going to hold valuable for a longer period of time? Now, obviously, we didn't have a business model at the ABC that required us to chase advertising. So I remember saying to our team at the time, if everybody else in the clickbait world is going to go and swim in the shallow end of the pool, let's stay down the deep end and we might just find that that's a successful model for us. And indeed, what you've seen since then, as clickbait has died, is people returning to what is fundamentally valuable about journalism, and subscription-based services emerging as the much more successful business models in journalism. So luckily, we sort of went down that path. We decided to bank on the things that we could do better than anybody else at the ABC: in-depth journalism, investigative journalism, really good fact-based analysis, long-form international reporting, data journalism, those sorts of things that we thought we could really add value to. And in the end, that has provided us with a pathway to being the number one digital service in Australia.
So you've gone that way, and the New York Times is very interesting too for people who follow closely enough to see how they've struggled with working out where the future of journalism is, because they've tried many things, most of which have failed, but there have been also some pretty terrific successes. So is that your approach, to recognize that journalism is very much disrupted and you have to find new ways of doing things to reach the same audience in different ways, but also new audiences?
I think experimenting, trying different things, looking at how you can be appealing to contemporary audiences is absolutely critical. But I think the thing to remember, and when you look at the good business models that have emerged in journalism during these times, New York Times, you could argue The Australian, you could argue The Financial Review in this country, things, you know, built good subscription-based business models. Fundamentally, things that are valuable are still valued by audiences, and that is what emerges as a good solid business model.
Yes, but change is hard and journalists are no different. They will simply try and do what they used to do better. So what kind of conversations did you have at programs like Four Corners and 7:30 to sell them on the idea of doing something different?
Well, I think we came to a real pivot point where we had a choice. And the choice to succeed in digital was either to recognise that our broadcast programs and channels were going to decline in audience over time, and we could have turned them off much more rapidly and moved resources and effort over to starting new digital things, or we could recognize that, sure, radio and television viewing habits are going to go down over time, But if fundamentally the program teams and the journalists that work in on those platforms produce stuff that we can make valuable to digital audiences, we should keep doing the valuable stuff for broadcast, but just open up new pathways for digital audiences to enjoy it. So I called it Equal Digital Life. And effectively it was to say, if we're going to do a story, it's got to have equal value to digital audiences as it does to our broadcast audiences. And how do we think through what that means? So it was about sitting down with and I suppose encouraging teams like Four Corners and 7:30 and Australian Story and Foreign Correspondent and Radio Current Affairs at the ABC and saying, we want the very best of what you do to live long and prosper. So how are we going to give it an equal digital life so that it is valuable to digital audiences as it is to your loyal television and radio audiences? And in by doing that, we opened up a whole new pathway to demographics that were never going to watch television or listen to radio. So what we see in our audience profile now is still a very successful television and radio audience for those brands, but a completely different demographic coming to the same stories on digital platforms in ways that they couldn't imagine and maybe some of our program makers couldn't have imagined 5 or 6 years ago. And that really has what's driven the success of ABC News on digital platforms.
So if that was five or six years ago, and you being very much one of the leaders on strategy inside the ABC, where are you going to be in 5, 6, 10 years from now?
So I think the next big change that's coming, and I think as foreboding as this is, I think it's potentially as big, if not bigger, than the digital change we've already been through, is one around the habits of our audiences. And I've sort of loosely called it the end of schedule. So right through the history of journalism up until now, stories were and outlets were built around deadlines. So your newspaper arrived in the morning, your television news bulletin was at 6 or 7 o'clock at night, your radio programs were on these times, your newsroom worked to deadlines and to a schedule. And my theory is that news consumption from now on really is not going to be based around schedule. It will be based around my personal habits, when I have time to consume things that I'm interested in a personalized way, but in a very much an on-demand way. And if you think about television viewing or radio listening, we're already there. Netflix and Spotify are examples of these sorts of things. What does that look like in a news and information context? Clearly, there's some digital platforms out there already serving that need. But I think as journalists and as content makers for contemporary audiences, we totally have to grasp personalized and on-demand experiences for audiences, and that will be the next wave of change, the end of schedule.
Outside the journalist community and, say, in the business community or in the political community or in the general community, accuracy of journalism is a continual conversation. It's the same conversation that people have about Facebook and Twitter as well, that they're rogue channels for misinformation. How do you, in that context that you've just been describing, create a situation where trust in journalism goes up? Because that has to be an essential differentiation, doesn't it?
It does. And look, things are playing out well for good journalism organisations in this way. You know, again, remember back a few years when we thought Facebook was our best friend until we worked out it was selling all of our data to anybody that wanted it. And then suddenly we didn't want to share so much of our personal lives with Facebook. Or when we thought that, Google and other platforms were a source of great truth and you could find out anything that you could ever want to know on these platforms until we found out a lot of it was fake. So what you've seen happen is a return to sources of information that people know they can definitely trust. And what journalists do is trade and trust. And good journalists absolutely seek the truth in the way they go about their job. And I actually think that has become more and more valuable as a commodity, as more and more sources have been available to people.
So what you say is dead right. And I think what you said was good journalists deal in truth. But you'd also know that the reputation of a lot of journalists is that they take shortcuts. don't follow the code, don't corroborate information, don't ring people to check facts, those kinds of things in the rush to publish. So how do you change that?
Well, that's difficult because what you're seeing now is fewer journalism resources. And if you're talking about a fully on-demand experience, endless deadlines. So if you get fewer journalists hands-on creating all sorts of different types of content, you know, with not necessarily any deadlines and boundaries about when they deliver it, that is a very hard quality control process. And that is why even when people look to the ABC or look to other trusted media sources, sometimes there's a perception that quality has gone down. And it's true. If you once had, you know, a number of sub-editors sitting across a five-minute radio news bulletin, and now that's being written, subbed, and read by the newsreader, obviously something's got to give in all of that. So I think the best we can do in that situation is use technology well, is use whatever tools we've got well, and I think is to reflect on the fact that we are not going to be able to do the volume that we once did in some of the things that we have, that traditional audiences have wanted of us. So certainly one of the conversations we've had with our local newsrooms is you've got to dramatically reduce the number of stories you do. And you, what we've got to think about is what are the stories that we can do that are most valuable, that can, we can make the most difference with, and how do we retain the quality around the storytelling and the journalism for those. But we are not going to be able to do the volume of stories, of sort of record of the day type stories, commodity news type stories that newsrooms once did in great volume.
Does that mean that we lose out on information? It means that, doesn't it?
Well, it does, but I think what you will see move into those spaces then, whether we like it or not, frankly, is other sources of information that then emerge. So you might not have a local radio station, a local commercial radio station in your town doing local radio news bulletins anymore. In fact, we know if you're in regional Australia, you probably don't have that anymore. Whereas 50 years ago, you probably did. So what will emerge in those spaces, I think, are new forms of journalism, digital startups, community-based journalism organisations, those sorts of things. Now, will the quality of the information be as good? That will be in the eye of the beholder around what contemporary audiences expect, I think. But it will certainly be different to what was there when you had a local newspaper and a local radio station and a local television station bringing you the very small minutiae of the day's news in your place.
And also tied in with trust in journalism is, and I've heard you talk about this before, is curiosity, the curiosity of a journalist. How do you tie trust to curiosity? How have you done that in the past?
So the great contest, I think, in newsrooms at the moment is commodity versus curiosity. The commodity is how many different kind of versions of that story can we get on different platforms, and just to be getting, you know, the basic news to people, necessary in many ways, against the I've got a hunch about a story, I feel something in my gut, I really think we need to explore this, I need to pick up a phone or get out there on the street and chase this story down. How do you weigh the resources up to allow us to produce enough of the volume of journalism to keep audiences happy while allowing journalists to still be curious and go and find original things out so that we're actually adding to the knowledge base of the community? It is a contest in every single newsroom. Every single newsroom will be pulled in both those directions and more and more.
How are we going to be able to afford that? Because because people do measure a person's productivity by the number of stories that person does.
In the end, it will be about choices for different news organisations. It really will be. And I remember I went on a visit to the New York Times a year or two ago. And this was at the time when they were really hitting their strides with subscriptions, and they would become this great global brand, and everybody around the world was after a New York Times subscription, and they built this great digital business out of it. And I said to them, well, how did you do that? I mean, how did you put all those resources into that global news, that sort of the stuff that everyone around the world wants to kind of read and to consume? And they said, well, look, we stopped doing a lot of local news. So the New York Times became much less New York. And much more of a global brand. So in the end, each different news organization will have to make some choices, you know, about what it thinks is a priority for it to retain the quality of the journalism and to allow it to continue to do the journalism. So for instance, a very contemporary example for us, and it's one that we still talk about at the ABC, is, you know, I took the very difficult decision to axe Late Line, a very successful television program over, you know, a generation that in a late night time slot was getting nowhere near the audience as it used to. And in doing that, what we did is we turned some of that resource, a lot of that resource, into a multi-platform investigative journalism team. So rather than investing all that resource in one late night time slot on television that was serving a declining audience, we turned it into a team that is now producing stories across all of our outputs on radio, television, and digital, original journalism, investigative journalism, giving them the time and the resources to be able to do that. So that was a choice for us. It was a really difficult choice that we made. A lot of people still criticize the fact that we don't have Late Line anymore.
So, Gavin, how significant is what's happening with the spat with China?
Well, you know, the ABC has been in China for 47 years, and I think that ability to observe China up close, to relay its economic success, to talk about its cultural importance, to build those bridges and ties between our two countries, I think is absolutely vital in our region as China emerges as a global superpower. It's the people-to-people relationship between our two countries that I think is still vital in a region that is reforming the world right now. China will be the story of our time. It will be the emerging economic powerhouse, not only in Asia, but across the world. And I think not only for our self-interest, but for the successful operation of a free and open world, having good relations with China, I think is important.
Well, strategically, you and your colleagues high up in the ABC would have had to think about the future relationship with China. And in a way, it's a bit like the relationship with people close to Russia, next door to Russia in Europe, have with that, if you like, rogue state. So do you see this as an issue that we have to manage a relationship with a very difficult neighbour?
We do have to find a way, and China has to find a way to engage with other countries. China won't survive on its own. Even though increasingly it feels like that's how it wants to portray itself. But absolutely for us and for other countries in the region, we can't survive successfully without finding a way to work with China and to work alongside it. So somehow, some way, we are going to have to find ways to build bilateral and multilateral bridges with China, or we're going to go into an era that we can't quite imagine as we sit here right now.
So you've talked about where you see the sort of the next leap in journalism. Have you got a vision for the future of journalism?
So I think the vision for the future of journalism is going right back to the basics of what journalism is for me. It's not about which television programs you have on at what time slots or what radio programs or how long that news bulletin is or, you know, what the demographics are. It's fundamentally going back and saying, what is the basic commodity that people really need out of journalism? It's great storytelling. It's telling me something I don't already know. It's narratives. It's brilliant pictures. It's great audio. These are the fundamental elements that will always succeed, I think, for audiences, no matter what the platforms are or no matter how people get their news and information. So I keep thinking the future of journalism is fundamentally about what journalism has always been. And if we complicate it too much more than that, I think you then get stuck in a platform-driven world where you're making decisions around what we think TikTok might want today, whereas in 5 years' time, it'll be a completely different platform, still looking fundamentally for valuable things.
So is the future about paying fewer journalists better money so that they can be better at the craft?
Well, I think it depends who you are, but I think what it fundamentally does is it's identifying what it is you bring to an audience that nobody else does in an excellent way. And I'm not being highbrow about that. I don't mind if that is celebrity news or whether that is sports news or whether that is insights into politics or whether that is investigations into big international events. What's the thing that is inherently valuable that you do better than anyone else? And how do you build infrastructure around that that you can sustain a business model around? I think that is the secret of where we need to be. You'll see many fewer broad-based newsrooms trying to be all things to all people all the time, I think. And you'll see more organizations emerging that are excellent at one thing and build a real specialization around that.
Gavin Morris, thank you very much.
Thanks, Ben.